Welcome to Recover Strong, a show that will transform your recovery from an eating disorder by helping you go from theory to practice to mastery. I'm Jessica Flint, founder of Recovery Warriors, and you are listening to our podcast channel created specifically for you in all the stages and phases of recovery. I want to celebrate you for carving out this special time to learn new skills, tools, and get the inspiration you need to recover strong. Let's get started.
I'm your host, Andrea Wells. And just like you, I understand what it's like to live with an eating disorder and be held back by body image struggles. The recovery journey is ongoing, and we're all in it together as we learn to embrace new behaviors and new thoughts day by day. Join me as I connect with eating disorder experts and thought leaders to give you the tools, resources, and strategies you need to recover strong. Today, I'm joined by eating disorder survivor and advocate, Cara Lissette. Over the years, she has candidly and vulnerably shared her journey of recovering from an eating disorder and bipolar disorder through social media and her blog, Cara's Corner. And she's turned these struggles into purpose to become a mental health nurse, therapist, and author of several mental health books, including the bestseller, The ED Recovery Journal, and the upcoming Your Guide to Eating Disorder Recovery, How to Get Started and Keep Going from Someone Who Has Been There. Cara is passionate about recovery and breaking down the stigma around eating disorders and all mental health struggles, while emphasizing the importance of finding who you are outside of your diagnosis and knowing that these struggles do not define you. I'm so excited for you to listen in as Cara and I dive deeper into these topics and discuss her work and her recovery journey as she shares some valuable insights to help set you on a stronger path in your healing. So welcome, Cara. It's so nice to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
I love your pink hair. It's like Cara's got like the coolest pink hair. So there's so much I want to dive in with you today, but to start things off, what was your experience like living with and recovering from an eating disorder?
So I first started having body image issues when I was probably like around 8 or 9. So I was quite young. I grew up in a household that was quite diet centric, and there was quite a lot of talk about diets and food and other people's bodies and things like that. So I think I kind of internalized that when I was quite young. I got diagnosed with an eating disorder when I was about 13, and then basically just went through lots of relapse recovery cycles until I went into treatment most recently when I was 29. So it was a very long period of time, although it wasn't consistent during that time. Like, I did have periods of wellness in that time where I was able to do lots of like good things, like get a degree and go traveling and things like that. So I haven't been like consistently unwell, but it has very much come and gone for like a very long period of time. And then I had a really good experience of treatment most recently. And I think I kind of just reached a point in my life where I was just like, I've been doing this for a really long time. Like, I don't think it's serving me anymore. It's not, it's just making my life like much more difficult for me than it is making it easier. And actually, I just don't really want to live like this anymore. So I just really like dove into treatment head first, gave it everything I had, and have been doing really well since then. So yeah, it was very hard work, but it's paid off in the end. And this is the longest period of time that I've ever been in recovery for. And I feel like it's going really well now.
Oh, that's amazing. And it's so common. Like, I know a lot of our listeners share the same thing, like the relapse cycle. I'm doing better. I'm back in again. What do you think was different when you were like, I'm really ready to commit? Was it your mindset? Was it the type of treatment, or maybe a bit of both?
Definitely both. I think partially, I had a hospital admission, like an inpatient admission, when I was a teenager. And then as an adult, I managed to stay in outpatient treatment. So I was able to, I had to take some time out of education. So I took like a year out of college and ended up not being able to go to uni like when I wanted to the first time. But I was able to like consistently hold a job down. So because my functioning remained relatively high, I suppose, like there were some sacrifices I was making, but overall I was still able to work and I was able to go to education, you know, on and off, and I had like a lot of friends and like a sort of stable relationship and things like that, that I kind of I guess I didn't really see the need to get that much better because I was still kind of being able to like live my life. Not as much in hindsight, I definitely wasn't living a very good life compared to how I do now, but I was like functioning okay. But then this most recent time, I got very, very unwell very quickly and I wasn't able to work anymore and I wasn't able to study and I wasn't able to go on holiday and I wasn't socializing. Like things just deteriorated really fast. And then I just felt like my whole life had like completely fallen apart. And I think that was when it was a bit of a wake up call of just like, oh, I don't want to do this forever. And I've reached a point where I've lost a lot of things that were really important to me. So I think part of it was that my life was very different. I think part of it was just getting older. And then I did have like a really intensive treatment. So I did a sort of like day hospital where I went there in the day, did all my meals and therapy and stuff. And then I came home in the evenings and I did that for like 6 months. And then I did therapy for about a year after that as well. So I had like quite a protracted episode of treatment there. And it was very intensive at the beginning. So I think it was basically a combination of all those things to summarize, like age, where I was at in my life, and the kind of treatment that I was getting.
Okay, so kind of like the perfect storm of factors came in to be like, good, it's different this time. We're really going into recovery.
Yeah, exactly.
And along your recovery journey, you started your blog, Cara's Corner. What inspired you to start this blog and start openly sharing your journey online?
Well, when I started, I was in a relatively okay place. So my thoughts were, this is just going to be like a reflection of somebody who, you know, has struggled with an eating disorder, but is, you know, sort of moving on from that and still living like a very functional life. And I look back at that in hindsight and I'm like, I think I was presenting myself as someone who was more well than I probably was. But at the time, it just felt like something that I could use as just a sort of like, these are the things that I've learned as somebody who had an eating disorder. And then it very much became almost like a live diary, I suppose, of like when the relapse happened and then my time like as I was going through treatment. And then subsequently now it's been about what it's like, I suppose, actually being in recovery and not maybe like faking it a little bit like I think I was before, not just to other people, but probably to myself. So yeah, I think now it's more just lessons that I've learned along the way, now that it doesn't have to be such like a live diary because my life is pretty stable now.
And have you used your personal experience in your work as a mental health nurse and a therapist and an author? How has that inspired your work?
So I think when I was a teenager and when I had that period of time in hospital and the nurses there were just like amazing. One of them actually ended up being my manager when I qualified like lots of years later, which was a really nice like full circle moment. But I just thought they were brilliant. And I did kind of toy with the idea of like psychology for a little bit. And then I looked into going into teaching because I really wanted to work with children. But I started working as like a healthcare assistant in a mental health hospital. And then that was kind of how I like fell into it, because that was just the sort of like natural progression from that point in my career. And then once you're a nurse, you kind of in your like career progression, you kind of either specialize in something psychological therapies wise, or you kind of go into like management. And there are other paths, but those are sort of the two main ones, I suppose. And I really just didn't see myself as somebody who just sat in an office and didn't have any sort of like face time with patients or any like clinical time. So then I did my like specialist qualification in training as a therapist. So I don't actually work with people with eating disorders because I don't think it's very helpful for my recovery. But I still think that having had like any sort of experience with mental health problems can just make you a lot more be able to empathize with people, I suppose, in a different way than you can maybe if you've not been through that.
Totally. And let's get into the topic of breaking down stigmas. So in your experience with living with mental illnesses, working as a nurse, as a mental health nurse, what are some common misconceptions or stigmas that you see around eating disorders and mental health struggles?
You know, one that's got a lot better, I think. So I've worked in mental health now for like 15 years, something like that. Basically, like my whole adult life, I've worked in mental health. And what I think's got a lot better now, but was a really big problem going back, I guess, maybe 10 years, something like that, is that people, even like professionals with all this training and all these qualifications, still saw eating disorders being very much like a choice. And like those people are in control of how they're behaving and, you know, basically they're just not trying hard enough to get better. And when I was around people like that, I was very much like, oh my God, they can't ever find out that I had an eating disorder, because then they'll feel all this kind of way about me, and people will maybe think that I'm not very good at my job, or I'm not safe to be doing my job, or I don't really know what I'm talking about, or yeah, lots of different worries I had, I suppose, of like the perceptions that people would have of me, which I don't think were entirely inaccurate back then, because I felt that way because of the things I was hearing other people say around me. But I do think, I don't know whether I just work in like better services now or whether things have changed, but I definitely don't see that as much anymore at all as I used to going back a few years.
Yeah, well, 15 years ago, I mean, it's so interesting. Like 15 years ago, I feel like a lot has changed in terms of like stigma and the conversation around mental health. And there's also still a lot more to go.
I think what I really struggle with, and I realize that this hasn't directly impacted me, I suppose, because I have been someone who has a sort of like quite a stereotypical presentation of someone with an eating disorder, but just that if you don't look the way people expect you to look, they don't think you have an eating disorder, or that they think it's less serious. And I have had that experience to a lesser degree, I suppose, than people with other diagnoses. But the most recent time I went into treatment, I'd asked for support from the eating disorder service, and they said no, because your BMI is healthy, despite the fact I'd seen them twice previously. So I thought they know that, like, that's not necessarily going to stay the case. And it didn't. And then by the time I did end up going to see them, they were like, this is urgent, you need to see someone straight away. Like, and I just thought by that point I couldn't work. And I was really frustrated, because I thought, I came to you when I had quite good insight and was probably in a really good place to be able to be doing therapy. And you said no, because you didn't think I was unwell enough. And we've now ended up in a point where you've gone, oh gosh, you're so unwell, you can't actually do therapy at the moment. And you can't work, and you know, all these things. And that was really frustrating to me, because I thought, I know services are really stretched and I get that, but actually, if you're not even going to take me as someone who had, you know, low end of healthy BMI and has a really lengthy history with eating disorders, what's that going to be like for people that don't have that, and who are, you know, it's their first presentation into the service, or they have like a different diagnosis, or, you know, presenting in a different way? Like, if I was finding it that hard to get in through the door, then other people are going to find it, you know, significantly harder than I did. And that really frustrates me, because I was kind of like, you're the experts, you're the ones that should know that, you know, somebody's weight isn't necessarily relevant to like how healthy they are, or what their mental health is like, or how severe their eating disorder is. So I found that like really frustrating. And that's coming from someone who then did meet all the criteria and got exactly the right support and things like that, which a lot of people just won't, that won't ever happen to them. And I find that really, really difficult to kind of get my head around.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking. And like, you knew, you're like, I need help. Like, let's do this now before things get worse. And you're turned away. And I know in the UK, like with the National Health Service, there's guidelines. And in the US, even with private insurance, there's still guidelines that are like, you have to be a certain BMI. And I don't know, I could go on about this one for so long. It just makes me so mad as well. So thank you for shedding light on that. And how do you work to break these stigmas down in the type of work that you do and through sharing your story?
It's difficult, I think, because I do try really hard to, but I'm also really conscious that I'm still the sort of status quo, I suppose, of what people think someone with an eating disorder would be. So I think the way I try and share things from other people where I can, because I think there are a lot of people with like my voice in the kind of eating disorder space, I suppose. So I do like to be able to share things from other people if I can as well, because I do have like a sort of a relatively good platform to be able to do. But also, I guess just the fact that I'm 34 this year, and like actually people think people with eating disorders tend to be like teenagers, and although I was a teenager at the time, I didn't just grow out of it. And it's kind of the perception people have, isn't it, sometimes? It's like, oh, she'll grow out of it, don't worry about it. And I very much didn't. I grew into it, if anything. It just got progressively worse.
Yeah, it gets worse. Yeah,
exactly. So I do, I guess, try and raise awareness of the fact that also people can still be not recovered, but still be in like a recovered body. And that maybe, I suppose, I reached like my body reached a healthy point a very long time before my brain did. And I like to kind of emphasize that, I suppose, because I think there is a lot of expectation that people are like, oh, when you've gained the weight back, you're going to be okay. And actually, if anything, you probably feel worse for like a period of time. after that happened. But also, I do think there is, for people that have eating disorders, just like a sense of hopelessness sometimes. And I kind of like to challenge that a bit as well, because I felt really hopeless. And I know a lot of other people feel that way. And actually, like, you know, I'd like to think that I can be even more recovered in the future. But actually, my life is very good at the moment, and I'm very stable, and I feel very well. And like, I like to be able to give other people, I guess, some hope that that is also possible, as well as the idea that, like, I can't get better. And sometimes on social media as well, you see people who have been unwell for like a very, very long time. And that can also, I think, play into that hopelessness a little bit, because if you can see other people and you think they've not managed to get better, I wonder, you know, whether that will ever happen to me. So I like to try and challenge, yeah, some of the stigmas around it for people that don't know as much, but also try and challenge some of those thoughts from people that have eating disorders and that are feeling quite stuck.
Yeah, you're inspiring hope. Your blog and your social media, they're so inspiring. And I think you're a testament to how far people can come. What steps do you believe that society as a whole can take to better support individuals living with eating disorders and reducing stigmas around it?
Do you know, one that I really think, which I think is probably getting a little bit better, but it's going to require just like a very big societal shift. It's just like the way we talk about other people's bodies and the way we talk about food as a society. And like, I think, I don't know, I mean, no, like I said earlier, like, there was lots of talk about dieting and food and weight and things like that when I was growing up. And I internalized that at a very young age, I think. And that wasn't just like from my household. It was also like magazines that I grew up with that were just awful. Like, some of the headlines about women were just absolutely awful. And I don't see them as much anymore, but it does still happen. Less so on magazines now, but more, I just think people have just got free rein on social media to just say anything they like about anybody, which is just awful. So that's kind of the main one, I suppose, is there needs to be a really big societal shift, I think, about the way we talk about our bodies and other people's bodies and the way we talk about food. Because at the moment, topics, like when we're talking about food, they're quite emotionally charged, those conversations still. And that a lot of people are talking about whether food is good or bad, and if you should feel bad for eating, and if you've been good for eating particular things. And there's a lot of like morality that comes along with that, that I don't think should be attached to something that you just need to do to survive. So those would be the main things, I suppose, that I'd like to see changing. With regards to like stigma, I guess, what's really hard is I think there's not more people with eating disorders other than anorexia would be the best people to educate people on those other eating disorders. I don't think there's necessarily like the space for people to feel safe to do that at the moment. And I don't know whose job it is to make that safe for people to do that. I suppose there is a responsibility on the people who are more safe to talk about their eating disorders for whatever reason, because they may be a bit more acceptable to talk about, that we've got a responsibility, I think, to make a platform for other people to be able to do it. But I also just think society is quite hostile to people that have eating disorders that are sort of less well known or socially acceptable, like more stigmatized. So that would also need to change, but I don't know how I would change that. But I think it is really difficult for people with any eating disorder, but especially I think for people who haven't had anorexia, to be able to talk about their experiences.
Yeah. I mean, I'm in recovery as well, and I relate to that not fitting the mold or like what people expect an eating disorder to look like, and feeling judgment or stigma around that. And what advice would you have for individuals who may be hesitant to seek help or share what's going on with them with an eating disorder due to fear of judgment because of these stigmas?
I guess the most important thing, I think, is to tell somebody, because like eating disorders just really thrive on like secrecy and privacy, and will really, you know, try and enforce that as much as possible on somebody. So I think you take a lot of power away from it by sharing that it's happening with somebody. That doesn't have to be a professional, but I think with like anybody in your life, if you are safe to be able to share that with someone, then that would be my biggest bit of advice. Because also, it's really hard to just be accountable to yourself. And once another person knows, you've almost shared that accountability with them. But I would always recommend people try and get professional help, with the caveat that I know not everybody can. And that's really difficult. But I suppose as somebody who has really benefited from getting professional support, I wouldn't want to scare anybody off doing that, because they feel like they might not get it. Does that make sense? So like, I wouldn't want to immediately say to someone, don't even bother trying. I would always advocate trying, just with the caveat that I don't know what the response to that will be, because it varies so much depending on like country and, you know, even like, you know, where you live within that country and what you've got access to and things like that. But I think telling anyone is a start, and then telling a professional is the next most sensible step, I think.
And what would you say to someone who's like, okay, Cara, I got you, going to tell someone, but oh my God, I'm so scared, because what if I tell someone what I'm experiencing and they just say, or they doubt me, or they don't believe me because I don't look like the stereotype? How can someone get past that fear?
I've tried writing stuff down before to give to people, because if you're having a conversation about something you feel quite scared about, it's really easy for all your words to just fall out of your head, and then you don't really know. You can't catch them to know what it is to be able to like express yourself very well sometimes, I think. So I really advocate that. But something else that I think can be really helpful is finding some like information about eating disorders that you can give to the person you're sharing it with as well. So you can say to them, like, these are what my symptoms are, this is what matches up to my experiences at the moment. So you can almost give that evidence of like, look, this is an eating disorder, this isn't just me, I don't know, behaving in this way on purpose, or, you know, we talked about earlier, you know, I'm not, this isn't my fault, I suppose, that like, this is what I'm going through, but these experiences do match the experiences of what this eating disorder is. And yeah, I suppose I wanted to share this with you because X, Y, Z, whatever that reason is. But yeah, sometimes that can really help, is sort of presenting somebody with some information as well, because a lot of people don't know about eating disorders. And I don't think people are like to blame for that, I suppose, because I think there is a lot of like misconceptions out there. So sometimes having, yeah, some learning materials as well as like sharing your experiences can be helpful, I think.
Okay, so coming at it with information, here's the facts, and here's my feelings, let's put it all together.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, thank you for that. That's very helpful. And let's get into the topic of finding your identity outside of an eating disorder. I know that this is a topic that is important to you. So how do you approach the concept of identity outside of your eating disorder diagnosis, and how can doing this help your recovery journey?
So I did a few different ways. When I was in like the day clinic, we used to do three goals every week. And one was an eating disorder goal, one was a self-care goal, and one was like a life, like a practical goal. So you used to always have one where it's like, I'm going to eat this particular thing this week, or go to this particular place or whatever. And then the next one would be like, I don't know, get a haircut, do my nails, wash my hair, you know, stuff like that. And then the last one would be just like a practical life thing. So it might be like, I'm going to go out and do this with my, like, go out and see a movie, or I'm gonna tidy my kitchen, or, you know, it could be anything like that. But having the fact that you only had one of those goals was about having an eating disorder was really helpful, because it helped you to think about, actually, what else can I do to enrich my life that isn't just specifically focused on like food or eating, or, you know, any of those other behaviors that sort of come along with an eating disorder. And then when I started therapy, I started setting like longer term goals for myself about like, what would I like to be? Where would I like to be in 6 months? Where would I like to be in a year? What's my like plan for the next 5 years or whatever? And started thinking about what my values are. And we did this bit of work around like looking at things that I did value, like my relationships and my education and my career and like new experiences and like seeing the world and being independent and things like that. And then comparing that to my value that I held of having an eating disorder, and just did a bit of work where I was just like, oh, actually none of those things are compatible. Like, I can't have those things and have an eating disorder. It's like one or the other. So that was really helpful to me, because I'd really held this very fixed view for a long time where I can have an eating disorder and still do everything else I want to do. And that very much was just like, oh no, I can't. That's not the case. So that really helped. And I just started to like build my life back up again. So I started doing things like watching like films that I used to really enjoy, and like going to concerts, and like picking up hobbies at home. Like, when I was in treatment was when we were in lockdown, so some of it was really hard, because it meant I just actually couldn't go out and do a lot of things that I used to really enjoy doing. So I had to be quite creative and think of like a lot of different things I could do at home. And then when I started doing things like going back to work, and then I went back to university, and those things really helped like broaden my life out a lot, and just gave me something else to focus on. because when I was only focusing on recovery, my life just became very like boring, I suppose. And I needed that time to focus on recovery, but it meant my life was quite empty of like other things. So I just, my identity is that I'm a sick person and I'm in, you know, I'm in treatment and I can't have a job. And that's just who I am at the moment. Like, I'm just someone with an eating disorder. And then it was like, when I went back to work, I was like, oh, I'm a nurse and I'm training to be a therapist and I like horse riding and I'm going on holiday. And like all those extra things that I like built up into my life helped me get like much more of a sense of like who I was again, that existed sort of outside of that space. I think there's two parts to it. I think one of them is trying to think about things like who you were before you had an eating disorder, or like who you've been when you're more well. Also, like who you'd like to be going forward. And I think combining those two things together can help you get like a real sense of kind of who you are now and what you can do to kind of achieve the things that you want to going forward, as well as sort of staying true to who you are in the first place.
As you move forward, do you feel like the eating disorder is part of your identity that goes away, or is it still there, but along with other stuff as well?
I guess it's like, I think it's a personal thing. It depends on how you'd like to see that. Like, I think for me, it won't, because a lot of my like career is built around the fact that I am somebody in recovery. And I think because it was something that shaped my career outside of advocacy in terms of like training as a nurse and training as a therapist and stuff, that all came from the fact that I'd been unwell sort of from when I was quite young. And I met my partner at work, all my best friends are from work, like my mum works in healthcare, so actually my entire life has almost been shaped by the fact that I had this treatment for a mental health problem when I was a teenager. So I think it would be kind of impossible for me to not have some sense of that being still part of my identity, because my entire life has been sort of panned out as a result of that happening. But I think there are people who are very happy to just say that chapter of my life is closed and that's the end of it. So I think you can just kind of do however feels best for you in your recovery. I think, like, for me, it's important that it stays part of my identity, I think, because it stops me from going backwards, I think, because I'm still holding it in mind, I suppose. Like, this is a thing that happened to me and this is the thing I need to stay on top of. And I worry that if I just shut the door on it and put it behind me, it would be much easier for it to kind of sneak back in. But I think while it's something I talk about a lot and that influences like a lot of my decisions and the direction my life goes in, it also means it's something that I'm really aware of and I'm able to like stay on top of, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does. And I think it makes sense that it's going to kind of look different for different people. And it sounds like in your experience, like, yes, it's still part of your identity that you had an eating disorder, you're in recovery from one, but it sounds like the way you relate to it is totally different now than when you were in it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like before, it was very much like, this is my entire life. And now it's just like, that was something that happened to me, but it's just a very small part of kind of what the rest of my life is now. So it's not, it was like the dominant feature for years and years and years. And now it's very much not. It's just something that's kind of in the background.
How has the eating disorder going to the background and finding more things outside of that, how has that improved or changed your life?
Immeasurably, really. Like, just in terms of the things that I'm able to do now. Some of it big things, like, so I've been to university twice again since, well, I'm in my second time now since I left treatment. I've had a promotion since that time. I've been on holiday three times in that time. And I've been like away with my friends, and just like in terms of like the big stuff, those were things that were just like completely impossible before. But also just smaller things, like I'm going out for dinner tomorrow. It's not really a big deal. And like, I had it's pancake day. Do you have pancake day in America?
We have pancakes. I don't know what pancake day is.
So it's pancake day today. I already had dinner today, so I was coming here to talk to you. So we did pancake day yesterday.
What is pancake day? How does that work?
Oh, I think it's something to do with, it's like a Christian holiday that's something to do with Lent.
Oh, okay.
But basically, it's just where you just make pancakes and everyone eats pancakes all day.
Is that like big where you live? Like, does everyone do that?
Everyone does it. Yeah. Everyone does it.
I've never heard of this. This is amazing.
Yeah, like literally, like you can't buy like pancake mix anywhere like this week, oh, or like The way we have different pancakes to the ones you have in America. So we have like crepes, they're like really thin.
Okay.
And most people put like lemon and sugar on the top. And that's like the traditional like way you'd have them. And you literally can't buy lemons like or lemon juice like at all in the week coming up to pancake day.
I've never heard of this. This is amazing.
It's a very big deal. But I did pancake day yesterday because it's coming to talk to you today. And just like small things like that, I suppose, of just being able to take part in things that like the rest of the world feels like it's taking part in is really nice. Because I used to always just be looking at people, just being like, oh, I wish I could have pancakes today because everyone else is having pancakes and I couldn't. And now it's just, yeah, just the ability, I suppose, of being able to feel like more involved with the world around me is nice.
Now here we are celebrating Pancake Day, a day early, but still. What are some of the other more like fun things or hobbies that you are bringing you joy and fulfillment outside of your eating disorder?
So I don't do it anymore, actually, because I'm getting married this year and I'm trying to save money. But I went horse riding a lot, which I used to like love doing. And that was a really nice thing to get back into. I do a lot of writing. I spend like a lot of time just out with my friends where I can doing stuff. I actually go out to dinner like a pretty decent amount now, which is quite nice to do, like with my family and with my boyfriend. And then at home, being able to do just like a lot more creative things that I just didn't have the brain space for. So do a lot of like things like cross stitch and embroidery and like making stuff and reading. Like I couldn't read like at all before. Then that was just like impossible. And now that was one of my New Year's resolutions, actually, that I was going to read more books because I can concentrate on things now better. And I've been reading, I think I'm on my like 8th book this year already. Like I've read so many books this year, like more books this year than I read in like the whole of last year. Just being able to do that's really nice because like, I couldn't justify to myself being still for that long and like resting. And also I just couldn't concentrate on anything for very long. Just being able to like be at peace is like, you know, it's not for me, it's not always just about the things I can do, it's also about the things I'm not doing. And sometimes that is just like I'm just sitting on the sofa and I'm just reading a book, and like that was just impossible to do going back a few years.
Yeah, it sounds like you're slowing down, you're taking it all in. It sounds like you have a very big, robust life. You have all these activities, you're like the hobby queen. So I think
I'm very lucky.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think it's such an inspiring testament. And before we wrap this up, let's get into your books. For the ED Recovery Journal, what inspired you to write that book and what do you hope readers will take away from it?
So it kind of came about because when I was in treatment, basically like bullet journaled my whole way through it, partially because when I'd been in treatment before, I didn't really retain anything that I'd done, like any records or anything like that. It meant that when things got difficult again, I couldn't go back and look at anything because I just didn't have it. And that was one reason that I wanted to document everything so that if things were getting difficult in the future, I could look back at it and be like, these are all the things I learned. This is how I felt at this time. This is what I did in therapy. This is like what my goals were, stuff like that. But also it then transpired, the process of doing it was just like super therapeutic. Like I always like carved out like, I don't know, every Sunday afternoon, I'd be like, that's my journaling time. And I'd decorate it and draw in it and colour it in and put like washi tape and like stickers and stuff like that, like all over it. And yeah, just kind of documented like my whole journey through it, really. And I found the process of actually doing it was really good for my brain in terms of like, yeah, it was just therapeutic. It was quite calming. It allowed me to be like creative, but also ended up then being this really good resource that when things have got difficult at any particular time in the future, you can just look back at it and go, oh, that's what I felt like at that time. I definitely don't want to feel like that again. Or, oh, I can't remember this particular thing I learned. What did I do in this particular session of therapy? And then I can look back on it and remember stuff. So that's how it kind of came about. And then sometimes I think I talked about it a bit on Instagram and people had said like, oh, that sounds like it'd be really helpful. So then I was like, what if I just make this into something that someone can do themselves rather than, yeah, dictate to people, I suppose, like how I'd done it. Because the whole purpose of why I wanted it to be like a journal is that other people could be creative with it as well, rather than me just being like teaching it to people, I suppose. Like, because the actual process of making it was nice to me, I wanted to be able to give that to other people as well.
Yeah, and then people can make it their own. And that's smart. It's like the process of it is helpful. And then it's you can self-reference back to what worked for you, because there's so much advice and resources and books and social media accounts out there with all kinds of advices. But your journal is like, here's what I know worked for me. And you can refer back to that. That's super helpful.
Exactly.
And let's get into your upcoming book, Your Guide to Eating Disorder Recovery, which I think touches on a question that a lot of people in recovery ask, which is it's a fundamental, which is just how do you recover? So what key insights or strategies can readers expect on this topic in your book?
So I've tried to do it in kind of a linear way, so that the beginning of it is about like, what is an eating disorder? How does it affect people? How can you start recovery? Like, what small steps can you take? And then the end is about like how to keep going when you get stuck and what your life might look like outside of an eating disorder. And then there's like a chapter for carers as well, that people can give for their carers to have a look at, with, you know, parents, partners, friends, whatever. And then the middle is just all like all different situations you might come across and how to tackle like particular ways you might feel about things. So there's some things that are practical, like staying well when you're traveling, when you're sick, when it's the holidays, like when you're at work, stuff like that. And then there's also things about like identity and body image and like self-compassion and stuff like that. So it's kind of like a few different sections, but it's basically just everything I've learned about recovery, really. And kind of came about because I was making like short blog posts and like, you know, posts on Instagram and stuff, which have a lot, you can only say like a tiny amount on those things, you know, like a really small amount. And I was just thinking that there's a lot more I want to say about these things and a lot more that I think I can give on these topics that I just don't have capacity to do in those formats that I currently have at the moment. So that's kind of how it came about.
And that's coming out in 2025. Is that correct? Do you have an exact date or a month? Or
no, I don't yet, but hopefully I will soon.
Okay, stay tuned next year.
Yeah.
And to wrap this up, I would love to hear how you define eating disorder recovery.
I think it's something that's going to be personal to every person. For me, my definition of it is that I don't respond to any of the thoughts that I get. So for me, it's not like a complete absence of having eating disordered thoughts, because I've had them for like over half my life. But I think one day they might not be there as much, because they're already much less than they were, and every day they get less than they have been. But at the moment, for me, I think I feel very stable in my recovery, and occasionally I do get thoughts that are probably not very helpful, either about myself or about food or, you know, about my body or whatever. But I don't need to respond to those thoughts at all. I have no urges to respond to those thoughts. The thought comes and it goes. And I think for me, that's what recovery is at the moment. It's just the fact that even if that monologue is still there quietly, it doesn't impact the way I behave at all or the way that I kind of live my life. And that's what I guess recovery is to me right now. But maybe in like a year's time or 5 years time or whatever, I might just be able to say like, yeah, I've recovered and my life is like, you know, I live like somebody who's never had an eating disorder. So yeah, we'll see.
Well, thank you for your current definition. I think that's beautiful. Thoughts really are just thoughts. Mm-hmm. And before we go, please let us know, how can all the listeners stay in touch with you and find your books?
So my blog is Cara's Corner. If you just Google that, I think it's the first one that comes up. My Instagram and my Twitter are just at Cara Lizette, all one word, which is my name. And then my book, the eating disorder one, is the Eating Disorder Recovery Journal. And then there's subsequent ones that have come out since. So there's one for bipolar, which is already out, one for OCD, which comes out in March, and one for anxiety, which comes out in May. And you can find them on Amazon and like all major book retailers.
Amazing. I will put a link to everything you just referenced in the episode notes for the listener to check out. And thank you so much for being here today. Thank you for taking the time to share your story. Such beautiful insights are going to be so helpful to our listeners. So thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Well, my warrior friend, thank you for having the discipline to listen in. If you found this episode helpful and know somebody in recovery who could benefit from its inspiring message, please share this show with them. It would mean the world to us at Recovery Warriors if we can get our cause out to more people struggling with an eating disorder. So if what you heard today was helpful, share the show with another warrior or anyone on your treatment team. You can do this directly from your podcast player or send them over to recoverywarriors.com. We have a goldmine of free resources there for all stages of recovery. And until the next episode, may compassion light the path you are on and courage keep you on it. You totally got this, warrior.